Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Roald Dahl Retrospective. I am Patricia.
And my name is Aaron.
So today we're going to be talking about, as of the recording of this podcast, the latest film from the Roald Dahl franchise. We're going to be talking about Wonka.
I'm so excited for this one. So to start off with all this, the fact that when this was first announced, it was kind of weird to say, oh, hey, we are going to have a prequel to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, I guess you could say. In this case, this is the character that was played by Gene Wilder, and two mixed results, I guess you could say, because there's some Roald Dahl diehards who do not like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and there are those that say that basically it's up there with The Wizard of Oz. And to be fair, it is, because a lot of kids, there's two movies that they'll see within their lifetime. It'll either be The Wizard of Oz or it'll be Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. So it is one of the one of the very starter movies that you would have for your kids, basically, to say, oh hey, this is an example of a really fun fantasy film from back in the day.
Absolutely, yeah. So it is a film that has transcended through multiple generations for over 50 years. It is whimsical, it is magical, it has memorable songs, it has really colorful presentations. You have Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka, which is a memorable highlight. You have the whimsiness of Roald Dahl mixed into it. So, yeah, even though the movie was not very successful when it first came out in 1971, with only having maybe about a few million dollars in the box office and many of the critics being kind of mixed with it, and some people even saying that the music was instantly forgettable, when the film came out on VHS in the 80s, that was when a new generation of people discovered it, and then they grew up with it, they introduced it to their kids, and even since then, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory has transcended through pop culture history. Commercials, toys, costumes, musicals on stage, everything. It is not even close into what would be considered to be the quintessential Roald Dahl adaptation.
I think basically it benefited from the television generation effectively. Everyone can now have an affordable TV in the house and also a video cassette player, and if you didn't have Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory on VHS, TV companies were more than happy to say, oh hey, can we get the rights to this movie so we can air it during Christmas or during holidays, so all the kids and all the families have got something to watch while they're waiting for dinner to be made.
Exactly.
And and in that case it became a large family favorite because of that, and it's still even to this day. I would be interested to see what the streaming figures are still for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Is it still as beloved as it was back in the time that we had the television generation effectively?
Yeah, and so the Roald Dahl film that pretty much was beloved by the viewers was not liked by Roald Dahl whatsoever, as we talked about many times in the Roald Dahl retrospective. And so it wouldn't be until 2005 in which we got a more accurate telling of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and it was pretty mixed. We talked about this in the Roald Dahl retrospective, but essentially you have, even though it's a much more accurate tale of the book, it was a little bit darker, and a lot of people were really mixed with Johnny Depp as Willy Wonka. So, yeah, it didn't really captivate the generations compared to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I mean, you and I have gone into death with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory in that regard. I mean, I've always said that, unfortunately, the weakest part of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is unfortunately Willy Wonka in this regard. As much as I love Johnny Depp in most of his other roles, unfortunately, he's playing Michael Jackson, in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. But the Charlie we had was great. The whole setup in regards to all that is great. I actually said it Christopher Lee is was Willy Wonka's father. So I think it had a lot of good moments in it. Unfortunately, I think it need the Willy Wonka, I think, needed some big retooling, I think, in that regard. But
right.
Besides that, I would say that Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is a more faithful adaptation to Roald Dahl's vision than Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory was.
I agree. I mean, it had a lot of the spirit of Willy Wonka injected into Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, from the recreation of the Oompa Loompa song using more or less the accurate tales of the poetry that was showcased in Roald Dahl. Charlie was much more authentic to the book. The kids were properly updated. The visuals were amazing for its time. So, yeah, I would say that Charlie and the Chocolate Factory doesn't deserve the hate that it gets, especially when you compare it to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. The one thing that that movie did bring to us was an origin story of Willy Wonka, where we get to see him as a young kid who loved chocolate, but his dad is a dentist and he didn't want him to have cavities and didn't want him to have all that kind of stuff because chocolate was just nothing more than just a distraction for perfect teeth.
By the way, there's going to be that minority of the audience, I think, you know, how does this, like, you know, doesn't Wonka kind of wreck the continuity of, like, either Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory and Charlie in the Chocolate Factory? You've got to keep this in mind. Like, you know, this is, like, you know, a different movie, effectively. Like, you know, it's, I would say that Wonka follows more from, you know, to, follows on to Charlie, sorry, Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory than Charlie in the Chocolate Factory does.
Yes. In that so regard. If you are a huge fan of Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, the 2005 version, and are expecting a little reference, you're going to be sadly disappointed. There is zero references to the 2005 film.
Exactly, yeah.
But if you're a fan of the 1971 film, wow, you're going to have yourself a great time.
Yeah, so with that being said, shall we get into Wonka?
Right before we do, I'm going to release this on the 8th of December. So for all of my American listeners, you will not get this movie until next week, which is on the 15th. So if you do not want to be spoiled with our discussion, please wait a week until this movie comes out in theaters, watch it, then come back to us.
And by the way, actually, one thing we're hoping to do is that, so we're hoping to, like, release Wonka and also Chicken Run Donner the Nugget, like, all in the same day, but we've just basically been told, you know, according to Netflix, that's you know, the movie's now not due to the 15th itself,
right?
So yeah, so we're not gonna be able to release that episode, you know, pretty much until it basically gets released on Netflix.
Hey, well, what do you know, you'll have two opportunities to listen to our discussions of Wonka and Dawn of the Nugget on the 15th. So there you go, there's a little bonus for you guys who are patient. So
awesome.
Yeah, so in the meanwhile, for the UK listeners out there who just finished watching the movie, let's get started.
Okay, so, I mean, the whole start is that, I mean, I love the start of this movie. Like, it's like, it's a metaphor for the American dream, eventually. Like, you know, here's Wonka, like, you know, he doesn't, like, have his whole, like, you know, ensemble that he does, but, I mean, obviously you can see that it is Wonka. He's got, you know, the scarlet coat, he's got the top hat, and, you know, he's, you know, he's got a pair of pants that he got from a postman in Minsk, apparently. So, there's, you know, there's obviously, like, you know, this humble beginnings approach to Willy Wonka, which, you know, I really like. And also they attached something into it which I mean I thought was awkward at one point, but then I thought, oh, hang on a second, this would have made sense during the time. You know, he's illiterate, you know, like, he is the only thing he's ever really studied in his life effectively that, like, he can be able to comprehend is chocolate. But you know, given, like, his current social status, you know, a lot of people, you know, reading and writing for a lot of people during that, you know, the era that this takes place in, was, you know, a luxury for some people. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for Wonka to be illiterate in this, it actually makes sense, you know, in this regard. So, I mean, he starts off, like, you know, the one thing I'm a bit, you know, I would say it was a bit questionable was that, you know, he starts off on a ship. He starts the whole music number about him going to the city to, you know, start up his, you know, his chocolate, you know, shop and everything like that. But, I mean, like, I would have liked to have, like, seen, like, some of, like, you know, the bits of, like, what happened before all of this. Like, we're just gonna, like, just introduce to Wonka on a ship. Like, you know, like, how did he get the opportunity to, like, go out into the world and everything like that? All of that's kind of, like, not explained.
Yeah, it basically, the song that introduces Wonka, which is called A Hatful of Dreams, it has him explaining that he has been on a ship for 7 years, traveling around so that he can be able to make it to the destination where he wants to be able to have his dream of making all of this chocolate in his own chocolate store. And so he basically is singing that with a lot of optimism, with a lot of hopeful wishing that he can be able to make it come true. And yeah, it would have been really interesting to see him, like, as a young kid, maybe, like, his first experience with chocolate, and then eventually we get to that point. Like, maybe, like, starting off with a little bit of a prologue of just him being able to be introduced to chocolate, and then finally he learns everything about chocolate, and then eventually we get to that point in the ship. Like, again, this is very similar to what they did in the 2005 film, in which we saw him as a little kid. He was really influenced by chocolate when he took that bite during Halloween, and he wants to be able to make his own chocolate, and he studies chocolate. He takes down notes about what are the great things about chocolate that complements the flavor. Like, okay, nuts caramel, coconut, all that kind of stuff. And then eventually he grows up and then he starts getting the process of doing his own factory. Again, we got that in the 2005 film, but we didn't get it in this film, which is a shame.
Yeah, like, but I mean, yeah, I love the fact that how we're introduced to Wonka is that he originally wanted to become a magician, but then, you know, he decided that, you know, he had a bond with chocolate because of his mother.
Yes.
And so, I mean, his whole feeling towards, like, you know, being, you know, a chocolate maker is that, you know, he wants to be closer to his mom in all of that. And, you know, that's very sweet and sentimental and, you know, well, you know, funny enough, sweet. But, you know, because I like that because, you know, a lot of people sometimes do things, you know, because they had, you know, I mean, so speaking as a Preston North End supporter, I mean, like, I'm sorry to switch gears a little bit, but,
no, go for it.
You know, a lot of people still travel to Deepdale, even though they may travel long distances because their dad took them there or their grandfather took them away and now they're with the gentry and they're no longer with us. And so to them coming to Preston North End for, you know, is a chance to be closer to those who are no longer with them anymore, you know. So there's that feeling. So I can feel with Willy Wonka on that, like, he wants to go, you know, make this chocolate because, you know, it's the thing that makes him feel closest to his mum. And you know, I can, you know, I love that.
Yeah,
about that Willy Wonka. He's not just making chocolate, just, you know, hey, I'm whimsical and everything like that, and like everything like that. He has a personal mission to this, and I think that's great to have in a character.
Yeah, and that motivation was not introduced in any of the incarnations that we've seen, not in the book, not in the two movies. So this is really refreshing to see a motivation behind why he wants to do chocolate in the first place, because of the connection with his mother. He wants to be able to make the world happy and experience the same thing he experienced when he was a kid. That is great. I love that. And it also gave me vibes of Danny the Champion of the World. Think about it. You have a single parent and their child, and they're going around in a movable vehicle, or in this case, we have a ship, and they're traveling around. They're poor. They don't have a lot, but whatever they're able to get, they're able to support each other, and they have this really strong bond. I love that reference. It is subtle for those who have no idea about Danny the Champion of the World, but for Roald Dahl fans, they will get a kick out of it. In fact, there's plenty of those references, and I'll get to that later.
Now, I tell you what, we're going throughout this discussion. I think some people are going to find that there's a lot of Roald Dahl-ness in actually in Wonka.
I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, exactly.
I love this so much. Anyway, so let's continue. So he finally makes it, and he is bombarded, of course, by three of the competitors. We have Slugworth, Farble Grubb, and Prodno. And tell me if it reminds you of a certain trio of baddies who wants to stop the protagonist.
Oh, you tell you what, you're going to remind me now. Who are they?
Boggis, Bunce, and Bean.
One fat, one short, one lean.
That's right, yeah.
Well, actually, funny enough, like, you know, I get what they were trying to do there, but I mean, they should have picked one that was actually, you know, one fat, one short, one lean, really. But instead, we get one that's like, you know, we get one that's quite like a big, massive dude, and then we got another one who, like, you know, can't keep his mouth shut, and I'm surprised he manages to get his way up to the top of the chocolate chain. You know, the fact that he just spills out all the secrets pretty much. And that bit, that, I gotta be honest, he didn't make that much sense, that one particular guy. And then there's the other one who is just, you know, he's, you know, he just reminds you kind of like, you know, of Bean. In a way,
yeah,
like, he's the scheming one.
Yeah, exactly. So essentially, we have Prodnos is Boggis, who's basically like, I mean, he kind of looks like Boggis. So you have the hair, you have the mustache. The only difference is that he's not fat, but yeah, he does basically just spill all the secrets. Then we have Fargle Grub, who's essentially Bunce, who's you know, kind of like the one who's kind of like pale and mealy, and he dislikes when you say the word poor because he does not like the poor people. And then you have Bean, who is essentially Slugworth in this version, where he's the scheming one. He's the one who's behind everything. And you would know this reference because, again, we'll get to the scene a little bit later, but the trio are essentially working together. They have this huge conglomerate of all the chocolate in this town, and they don't want anybody else to overtake them.
Yeah, and the church is on it as well.
Oh, of course. I mean, there has to be a social commentary on
it. I think a church that runs, that's run by Rowan Atkinson, I think, well, we would have some kind of dodgy things going on about it.
Yeah.
Mr. Bean.
Yeah, it's actually really great to see Rowan Atkinson back in a Roald Dahl adaptation.
Bad guy, pretty much.
Yeah, he is a bad guy. So the last time that we saw him in a Roald Dahl adaptation was The Witches, and that was 23 years ago, where essentially in that film, he was like essentially playing as the Basil Fawlty of Fawlty Towers. But this time, he's actually a corrupt priest like Judge Frodo.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? There is a bit of Disney-esque to this Wonka movie, isn't there? Like, you know, there's this warmth and whimsicalness and everything like that. And but also, it's not afraid to go to dark places when he needs to go to dark places.
Just like Roald Dahl.
Exactly, yeah. And also, you know, we've also got some nods to Matilda as well in all of this as well.
Yeah, like, with our character Noodle.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. Yeah, but also with, you know, there's also the Chokey, but he said it's the coop.
In the coop, yes. Yeah,
exactly.
Yes.
So, you know, like, actually, you know, the only thing I was thinking of, and I was actually going to be, I thought this would be hilarious if they did this, like, you know, maybe like during like one of the night scenes, like you just see like a silhouette, like the BFG walking around, like, you know, I would have liked something like that, but mind you, there is a bit of like, you know, BFG in all this, because look, you know, you got Willy Wonka who's kind of doing that, like, you know, because, you know, the BFG makes his dreams together in order to, like, you know, create the dreams and that, you know, the Cosgrove Hall version of the movie does a great job of doing that. And but you see Willy Wonka doing all that. He takes like all these fantastical elements and puts them all together and makes like the greatest chocolate. And there's elements of the BFG in there as well. I thought that was brilliant.
And also, not to mention that the BFG has a companion with Sophie. And Noodle is along with Wonka. Sophie.
Yeah, like, you know, just like, you're great. It's like, it's kind of, you know, here's the thing about this, though. Like, these aren't references just thrown in our face. You know, you and I recently did a Chisel Chats for Wish.
Yes.
Didn't we? Disney Wish. But it was like, it was full of Easter eggs and, like, not very, you know, very, very unsubtle, like, hints at, like, other things. And by the way, when it gets to the credits, it's very unsubtle. Like, you know, it's virtually just put the characters up on the screen. But, you know, here in this movie, they do it correctly.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you are not a Roald Dahl fan, you would these references would fly over your head. But if you are, and if you catch it, and it's amazing that you even just recognized it. It's like, oh wow, that's a really nice reference, and it wasn't shoved into our faces like it was with Wish.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, you and I went to watch this movie at you know, speaking of, like, you know, Wish versus Wonka, pretty much at this point. You and I went to the theater. By the way, we went on a Friday afternoon at about 12:30. Like, you know, it was a work day, pretty much. Okay, it's Friday. I mean, I get that, but you know, we were booking our tickets. And we thought we were going to be there pretty much by ourselves. No. Like,
no.
That theater was half full, pretty much. On a Friday afternoon, pretty much, late Friday afternoon, pretty much. Like, you know, you can watch this on, like, during your lunch break and like that. Like, you know, it is, like, you know, an hour and a bit. But, you know, I was quite enjoying. And also on top of that, today, when we're recording this, you know, we're in a couple of hours' time, there's going to be a 7 o'clock showing and a 7:40 showing, and both are going to sell out.
Wow.
That is incredible.
That is crazy.
Exactly, yeah. I'm interested to see what the weekend box office for Wonka is going to be here in the UK. I think it's going to be fantastic.
We're going to have to discuss about this in the next episode of Aaron and Patricia.
Well, I think we'll get to Sunday, and maybe we'll probably get the figures in, and we'll figure out what's going on. So, like, I've got to be honest with everybody. Now, I might eat my words laying this. I think this might do a better box office than Wish.
Okay, wow. I mean, to be fair, it wouldn't be pretty hard. I mean, if you're saying that the 7 o'clock and the 7:40 were pretty much full, and this is Friday, by the way. Saturday, Sunday, it's going to be the time in which
the weekends after that during the season.
Yeah, and if people are going to take a break from Christmas shopping, or if school is going to be out, or if you know, workers are going to have the day off, then yes, I think that we're going to see a lot of people coming into the theaters. And who knows, maybe it'll have a gangbuster in the box office, which, here's the thing, in Roald Dahl adaptations, they don't do very well with the box office, with the exception of the 2005 Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which made over $400 million. Now the question is, will this top it?
I tell you what, I mean, it felt very confident going into the theater, didn't you? Like, you know, there's other people there who are also very excited to go see Wonka, and they all look like Roald Dahl fans as well.
Yeah.
Like, you also see older, like, people there too. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they weren't coming, like, with their kids or, like, you know, just part of the family. Like, you know, they were literally going there to see this movie.
Yeah, and they were probably, like, in their 50s or 60s, which most likely would have grown up with the original Willy Wonka
exactly.
The Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, like, you know, this is, I think this is, by the way, I think, you know, the amount of entertainment anticipation and the excitement, I think, about this. I think they got this totally right.
Yes.
I think. And now, you know, here we are. We're, you know, talking about this now.
Yeah. So the movie was directed by Paul King, who did the Paddington movies. And you know how...
Well. I mean, like, once you got him involved, like, you know, it's, you know, what else can you say? There's a lot of Paddington in this movie as well, isn't there? Like, you know, the elements that they made Paddington Bear so wonderful to, you know, follow around. And, you know, that you can see elements of that in Wonka, mm-hmm. you know, when you're following him around, like, you know, this big, big, massive city. Because, you know, I think the one thing that Paul King knows great how to do is that you take a character who, you know, from humble backgrounds and you throw him into this big, massive world that is, you know, feels a lot big and very mean and very cruel. And then you bring in this innocent character and, like, he just brings, you know, his positivity to that world.
Yeah.
I think he does a great job doing that.
I agree. And it was co-written by Simon Farnaby, who also co-wrote Paddington and Paddington 2. And he also worked on Horrible Histories, Yonderland, and Ghosts.
Yeah, I think I've heard about those ones. I've not seen them myself.
Yeah, I haven't seen them either. Yeah. But yeah, I do agree with the whole Paul King Paddington thing, because I've seen reviews of Paddington from my friend Taylor, aka Y-Boy from Toon Grid, and he says it's the most wonderfully charming, magical thing he had ever seen in adaptation of Paddington, which for the most part, it would have been really, really easy to screw it up.
I mean, yeah, I mean, like, look at the origins of Paddington Bear. Like, you know, it was a stop motion, like, you know, where I think like 10-15 minute, like,
yeah.
you know, things. That's a, you know, we usually like go on, like, you know, during breaks, during Channel 4.
Yeah, pretty
like,
much.
I mean, like, it's just, it's a, yeah, Paddington Bear. I mean, the fact that they managed to take this character from, like, you know, the where he was, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, just turning him into like this phenomenal theatrical event to the point where, like, you know, he's doing segments with the Queen.
Yes.
The Queen.
Wow. Like,
yeah, I mean, is it, you know, what is Timothy Chalamet going to be now doing, you know, segments with like, the King Charles or something like that after this movie?
Yes, that would be really interesting. Timothy Chalamet dressing up as Wonka approaching King Charles III. That
with
would be
chocolate.
With chocolate, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, so continuing on. So, yeah, so Wonka is pretty much to the point of being broke, because this, you know, wonderful song, again, called A Hatful of Dreams, where he basically is walking around in this town and he is looking at everything with whimsy, but of course everything costs money. He was looking at a pumpkin, he accidentally dropped it, money. The shoeshine boy comes in and shines his shoes, money. A poor woman with her baby is begging for money. You know, there's the money right there. Oh, and also the newspaper and the map of the entire town, money. So pretty much he has nothing left. And so then he is like staying out into the streets, and then he is approached by somebody who says, oh, I know this lady named Mrs. Scrubbit who can be able to take you
in. By the way, like, you know, his introduction to this is not very subtle whatsoever. You know he's trouble. You know, you're just looking at him.
Yeah, like what? He is like this big guy with a measly mustache and big teeth, and you're thinking to yourself, oh wow, is this going to be our villain?
I don't know how to feel about that. Like, you know, I probably would have, like, you know, first introduced him into, like, you know, he looks like very, you immediately, you know, he looks like trouble. Like, oh my god, Willy Wonka's going to really be into it, you know, and he basically, he ends up does, like, ends up being indebted to, like, you know, where he ends up going and ends up being enslaved,
mm-hmm.
Pretty much, you know, into this, like, you know, washing factory. But, I mean, like, I don't know, like, that's one bit I thought, you know, looking back now, I thought, wouldn't it have been better if they started off, like, you know, maybe had him, like, you know, like Lotso. For example, from, you know, Toy Story 3, yeah. Well, like, you know, he's like a gentle giant, if you will. Like, you know, he doesn't mean any harm, and, like, you know, he's, and everything like that. And, you know, then you bring him in, and then, like, you know, all the bring him into a false sense of security, and then after that, I think that would have more impact, I think, rather than, like, you know, have him, like, you know, just be, like, fiendish, like, at the very beginning of the movie, like, you know, preying on, you know, Willy Wonka's naivety, I guess. Or maybe,
yeah.
But maybe he just, like, shows the flaw in the Willy Wonka's character.
I think that's what they were trying to emphasize. Yeah. They were trying to emphasize that Wonka is filled with wonder and hope and joy, and then he's brought into the real world, and it just smacks him in the face of being cynical and selfish and greedy. So I think that was the point. He's basically just brought into this world where everybody is miserable, and he is the one to bring hope with his chocolate. I think that was the point of it, and I think it actually works pretty well. The couple kind of remind me of the people who run the hotel in Les Miserables, in which it's kind of a little bit schemey. They're just doing the bare minimum, but all they want is the money, and the ways that they're able to come across it is actually pretty awful. So Mrs. Scrubbit just looks very innocent, and then you have this contract that she brings into Willie saying, if you just pay me this amount of money, then you can just stay the night and everything will be taken care of. And then there's the fine print, which again is a great reference to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory when they first enter into the factory and you have that big contract with all the little tiny small print.
I probably imagine that's where he got the idea from.
Yeah, that's probably where he got the idea from, so that he wouldn't get screwed over by any of the kids. Which again, if you go into the story of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, where the people behind Figgle Grub, Prodnose, and Slugworth stole his recipes, and that's why he closed down his factory for years. So he's trying to prevent himself from being fooled again.
Yeah. I mean, at one point I thought, you know, I was a bit worried that, you know, they were going to make, at that point I thought they were going to make Wonka a bit Mary Sue-ish a little bit, which, and what I mean by that is that, you know, he can read through the he can create all this magical stuff. He can read through a contract, like, you know, within like 5 seconds, things like that, like, you know, and be able to maneuver his way around. I thought that was going to happen. I thought he was going to sign this contract, and then every time, like, you know, Mrs. Scrubby tries to bring him something up on it, like, he would just say, oh, I've read this bit and that bit, like, you know, and that's not what you stated. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, then she would just frustrate Scrubby to the point where, like, you know, she wants to, like, you know, inflict violence upon him or something like that. I don't know. But that's not what we got.
No.
We're introduced to Wonka saying he's illiterate and he can't read contracts. And so he just basically signs whatever is in front of him.
Again, that makes a lot of sense within the context of when the story takes place. So around the time in which, you know, poor people didn't know how to read, it was a luxury to them. They probably didn't have a chance to go to school. They had to probably just learn a trade so that they could be able to make money for their families who are also struggling. And the rich people are the ones who pretty much know everything, and they are the ones who are essentially taking a monopoly and controlling these people.
Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, that was what was happening at the time. Like, it seems to me like this takes place in the Victorian era, from
yeah,
the looks of it. So, like, I mean, so that's the, you know, that's what I take away from this. But, I mean, they don't specifically call this London. Like,
no,
so, I mean,
even
like,
though even though it was filmed in London.
Yeah, it was filmed in London, but I think that's what they went off. And it's funny, like, you know, I was there as young as he's like, you know, well, if you want to go to American Dream, you shouldn't have come to Britain.
Well, I did, and I did experience a dream, but you know what? I mean, it was still a great time. I would have loved it if maybe we would have seen a filming of a scene somewhere, because we were in London.
Yeah, we were, and I mean, in regards to, like, you know, wherever it was filmed, I mean, like, they've done a very good job in regards to, like, you know, the era that it takes place in, and, you know, building the environment which, you know, Wonka shouldn't really be comfortable in, but he's going to fight for his corner anyway, he's going to fight for his shop.
Yeah.
And that's what he's going to do, because he's, like, he's driven by that. So, we're introduced, like, to all the slaves, pretty much, like, in this place, that are all indebted to Mrs. Scrubbage.
Yeah, pretty
and,
much.
So, we've got the accountant, we've got the comedian, we've got the telephone operator. Who
we've got the plumber.
We've got the plumber, too.
And then we got the little girl.
And we've got the little girl as well, who's Noodle.
Yes.
In this. And Noodle is a very interesting character, I think, in all of this. And so she's pretty much like, didn't you get a feeling of Doctor Who in a little bit? Like, you know, you got Willy Wonka as the doctor, and then you got Noodle as, like, you know, the companion to the doctor. It's like, where's the TARDIS at?
Or yeah. the great glass elevator.
Yeah, now that's going to be a place of pure imagination, I'll tell you what. I mean, again, I digress. But, I mean, I like the chemistry between Noodle and Willy Wonka in all of this.
I do.
Like, you know,
agree.
It's not like, you know, a couple or anything like that. It's like, it's a bunch of friends who, like, you know, have their own dreams. Like, you know, Noodle wants to be back with her mother, and wants to find out who her mother is. And, you know, Willy Wonka wants to, you know, Willy Wonka can relate to that, because obviously he was very close with his mother as well before she passed away.
Yes.
So, I mean, like, that's a great thing to have, I think, in this, you know, to have, like, you know, so much a common purpose to, like, you know, and it would mean a lot for Willy Wonka to see Noodle back with her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And that. So I think all of that, you know, in my opinion, I think it's great.
Yeah, I do agree. And I also love the fact that, again, Noodle is essentially a combination of Sophie and Matilda. Sophie, who is the orphan and who teams up with the BFG and, you know, to spread dreams around to all the children. And Matilda, who is the bookworm, and she's locked up in the chokey, or in this case, the coop. She's with abusive people who are her upbringers, and she wants to be able to break out of it, and she wants to be adventurous, and she wants to be able to shake things up so that she can be able to accomplish her dreams.
You know, I want to focus on Mrs. Scrubbage and who's the guy who's what's the name of the character?
Bleacher.
Bleacher, yeah. So you got Bleacher and Scrubbage. And, it's kind of funny, do they remind you... I can think of two references to this.
Okay.
I can think of James and the Giant Peach, so Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spike.
Yes!
And also I can think of the Twits as well, Mr. and Mrs. Twit.
I think it's Mr. and Mrs. Twit.
Well, I think they're a combination of both.
You might be right, because they do take in a child, and they raise them, and they do, the minimum stuff, and they expect a lot, very similar to Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker.
Yeah, too bad there wasn't a peach tree growing nearby. Yeah, and a guy with a funny bag full of stuff.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, so, but that's a great thing in itself. And actually, if anything, I think probably Wonka's probably the guy who has the what was it, Tiddlywinks? I think.
No, yeah.
It's not Tiddlywinks. It's I can forget what they're called. The dragon tongues or.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know everyone knows what I'm talking about. Someone's going to correct me in the comments, no doubt about that. Yeah, you have to forgive me. It's been a while since I've seen James. When did we review Ginger and the Giant Peach?
It was
a couple years ago.
Yeah, it was about almost 2 years ago.
No, 2 years ago. Wow. So, so I guess Willy Wonka's kind of our guy in that, he basically unleashes the chaos and, now Noodle is now pretty much, free to kind of do what she needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. So, pretty much Wonka revolutionizes basically washing clothes by, getting a dog to, chase, a patch that's, is from the mailman of Minsk, because apparently he likes to chase, postmen around. So
yeah.
He puts that on a conveyor belt, and then that ends up washing, all this stuff and increases productivity by, 30%.
Again, that's a great reference due to the fact that in later installments of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Willy Wonka creates his own machines in the factory to make the chocolate, and it's much more efficient.
Mm-hmm. So, there's that. So, now they have more free time to go outside, the washing place and to be able to do some. By the way, they couldn't have it where he constantly just keeps sneaking in and out and trying to avoid that. I think that was gonna. I think if they kept doing segments with that, I think it would go pretty old pretty quickly.
Yeah,
I think it was good to avoid all of that.
I do agree. So it starts off with Wonka coming up with the idea that he was going to go into the laundry chute and become essentially a bag of laundry for Noodle to carry out and deliver. And then he goes into the town and introduces everybody his chocolate. And then later on, when everybody else is joining him, the plumber tells him, oh, I know about the entire sewer system. Let's go through that so that you can avoid the police. Oh, by the way, we forgot to mention about the police in this. So the chief police officer is completely bribed by Slugworth, Farble Grouper and Prodnose, basically
don't
getting
you
like
the feeling there's a lot of modern social commentary in Wonka in all of this, the greedy kleptocracy, and then you have they're paying off the police basically to make sure that to protect their their corporations,
and that's how it used to be back then, unfortunately, in which
probably still is like that now.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, back then especially, I did hear stories about that police officers would be bribed by the higher up so that they can be able to, keep within the company's good graces. And, if anybody tries to break away from tradition, then, they'll be getting a big visit involving with little accidents. And this guy is being paid to the brim with chocolate.
Yeah, which is a very weird thing to have. But apparently this guy has a really weak sweet tooth. So apparently, yeah, he's going to, happily take bribes of chocolate. What does he do? I mean, obviously, during the course, you think he's selling it on, or he's doing that, he's kind of like drugs or something like that. I don't know, but no, apparently he eats it all for himself, and you slowly see him getting fatter and fatter, and more incompetent as you go along.
Yeah, is this supposed to be our Augustus Gloop?
He probably might be.
It checks off what we've been saying throughout this retrospective, is that fat people are portrayed in two things in a Roald Dahl adaptation: Augustus Gloop clones and villains. The chief police officer pretty much is both.
Well, to be fair, he evolves into Augustus Gloop. He doesn't start off as Augustus Gloop.
No, he starts off as the villain, and then he evolves into Augustus Gloop.
Yeah, so, I guess that's maybe an evolution in Roald Dahl's storytelling, that he doesn't start off as a fat guy. guy, he slowly becomes a fat guy.
I don't know. that's a good point. Anyway, but yeah, I think that the fact that we have this interesting social commentary about corruption is actually really interesting, and it goes even more deeper than you think with the whole concept of Farblegrupper, Prodnose, and Slugworth paying the police to get away competition so that they can be able to stay as this triglomerate. So, yeah, but still, Willy Wonka is just constantly not giving up. He's going around and he's giving everybody the chocolate, and everybody is happy and they're dancing and they're singing, and he easily gets away from the police. And yeah, it's just a great little number where it showcases that everybody is really excited about Wonka's chocolate. I mean, it's something that they've never experienced before, because apparently that, even Farblegrupper, Prodnose, and Slugworth have been cheapening their chocolate, and, they're not getting the full experience. But then when Wonka comes in with his unique flavors and his gimmicks, then everybody is just all over this.
Mm-hmm. And so I like something like, the animation that they're doing this, like, where obviously they didn't use, they actually milked a real giraffe in this.
It's clearly CGI.
It's clearly CGI, but I mean, I tell you what, it's scarily getting better, because, like, the Uncanny Valley is kind of slowly starting to kind of like, move together a little bit. Like,
yeah.
It makes you wonder if they have to like study a giraffe, like, where they get up and close with a giraffe and actually, say, oh, hey, how does this giraffe behave? How does it work?
They probably went to the London Zoo. They probably saw a giraffe. They probably, maybe filmed the giraffe, or maybe they even did some, motion to it. Like, they probably put, motion capture all over the giraffe to make it, move, and maybe they just CGI'd it later.
Do you know what? I want to see someone do some fan art of the Owl House with, all the witches, watching, the giraffe scene and saying, that's not how giraffes behave.
Well, I mean, there is one scene that actually kind of justifies it, though, but we'll get to that later.
There's also the most whimsical moments. Like, by the way, the one thing I'll say about it is that, if you're looking for, just, grim and dark, Roald Dahl is expected to be, unfortunately, there is a lot, and I mean a lot, of whimsy and happiness in this movie. Like, there's where Willy Wonka is, flying with a bunch of flamingos with the balloons, and, where they're dancing, on top of, the top of, a glass building. And everything like that. So, there is a lot of, hopes and dreams and things like that, which, where you think, Roald Dahl, would not approve of, and, I mean, I think that's probably going to be a question we're going to probably ask at the end of this podcast. What do you think Roald Dahl will probably have thought of this?
That's really interesting, considering that this is essentially an homage / prequel to the 1971 film. So whether he would have liked it or not, that's actually really interesting. But yeah,
I could probably imagine he wouldn't have, I'll be honest with you. Like, if he said, a couple of years later, after doing Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and he hated Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, he said, well, we're now going to do a prequel to that movie, I'm sure he probably would have walked out the room.
Yeah.
Probably.
Unless, of course, if he had complete control of it, and he would have done it his own way.
I guarantee you, probably, if you went into his, hilt while he was trying to write, and then he said, yeah, we're going to do a prequel to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, I guarantee you probably would have picked his femur up and threw it at you. But, I mean, I don't know. But, I think, so going back to, there's a lot of light and a lot of happy moments in this movie, and I just love how it is a response to all the negativity of this. Like, at one point, Willy Wonka actually does achieve his dream. He does open the shop.
Yes.
But then where the candy gets sabotaged by Mrs. Scrubbish, and so they end up all turning into yetis and hairy people.
Yeah,
and stuff
which
like
is
that.
A great reference to the fact that Violet Beauregard turned into a giant blueberry when the gum was not 100% clear.
I thought that's where we were going with it, but no, apparently all they do is grow mustaches and hair and different colored stuff. I really thought they would have gone further than that.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the gum that Willy Wonka introduced to everybody was brand new, so I guess it wouldn't make that much sense.
Okay, then, yeah, but I think it was Yeti sweater. Why would he collect Yeti sweat?
He collects a lot of weird stuff. I mean, yeah. He collects the marshmallows.
What does he have to do with it, though?
He makes his chocolate with it, of course.
To do that?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, he's able to make a can. He's been able to make chocolate to make somebody fly. I mean, how do you explain that?
I just think the idea of Yeti sweating a chocolate is probably. I don't even know what it. No one's ever seen a Yeti or like, you know, claim to see a Yeti. I'm sure there's all the conspiracy theories of all the tell us wrong. But I mean, like, yeah, that would be something else. I think.
Yeah, that would be really, really weird. But yeah. I don't question the logic.
I mean,
of
I don't
Willy
question
Wonka.
The idea of like, you know, capturing you know, sunlight and lightning in a bottle and things like that. Actually, I just got that now. Lightning in a bottle.
Good job. Congratulations.
The penny finally dropped, everybody. You heard it on this podcast. But so, yeah, but I mean, it's good to get all these fantasy elements and everything like that. But it's funny how, like, you know, he, like, collects things that, you know, might potentially have consequences later down the line.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like, the flying chocolate was quite interesting. Like, the fact that, you know, you would eat it and then also you go flying off somewhere.
Yeah,
I guess
he thought, you know what, the chocolate part isn't necessarily working. Let's just turn it into fizzy lifting drinks.
Exactly, yeah. Like,
but then again, he got the fizzy lifting drinks from the BFG anyway.
Okay, then cool.
Sure, why not?
Sure, why not?
Anyway, but yeah, of course it doesn't work out because, you know, Mrs. Scrubbit poisoned the chocolate when she was paid by the police to say, hey, this is what we want you to do. And so everybody turns into a Yeti. The crowd goes incredibly angry, throwing all the chocolate and...
They can have a riot. Like, you know, they might burn the shop down pretty much.
And then Willy Wonka just looks at them and says, this is fine.
Yeah, well, he doesn't actually go that, but...
I'm kidding.
I'm kidding, yeah. So, yeah, he's obviously, you know, heartbroken and everything like that. Like, you know, unfortunately, it's like, it's the typical, like, you know, everyone... Well, mind you, funny enough, it actually isn't that. Like, you know, you think that, you know, Willy Wonka would, like, have a fight with everybody, and then, you know, everyone goes away, like, you know, goes on a sop, and then they all come back together for, like, you know, the big ending and stuff like that. It actually doesn't really work like that.
No, it doesn't.
Really, yeah. So, I think, yeah, I'm glad they didn't go in that direction. Pretty much, that's another thing I'll praise this movie for. Like, they didn't go in the stereotypical direction. Like, everybody has a falling out, they all go their separate ways, and then they realize how, you know, they've been much of the dicks they've been to each other, and then all of a sudden they come back again for the grand finale to, you know, finish off the bad guy.
No, that doesn't happen.
That doesn't happen in this. And by the way, they did. There's this one bit they did, and you know Willy Wonka's not going to die in this movie, and you know that Noodle isn't going to die in this movie, because, like, you know, they, you know, because there's a prequel to, like, another movie where that character is alive, clearly alive in this. And so, like, I didn't really buy the whole, like, you know, them drowning in chocolate bit.
Yeah.
Really, like, you know, and I get maybe for people who haven't seen Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, may, you know, if they're going to, like, do it in chronological, do you think there's going to be people who are going to be, like, watching this in chronological order? They'll watch Wonka first and then watch Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory afterwards.
Oh, wow. We're going to get our own Roald Dahl cinematic universe.
Well, it's turning into that at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Much.
Yeah, so, like, but mind you, if Wonka does really well, I mean, like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they decide, oh, hey, let's do now. The prequel works out pretty well. Let's do a sequel to Willy Wonka in a car.
We will finally get the Great Glass Elevator.
Well, you know what? Given how many times we've asked for the Great Glass Elevator and it's just never happened, I guarantee you, the point might just do it where it's like, you know, Willy Wonka's passed on and Charlie's now, like, you know, the guy, and, you know, he's looking for a successor.
Oh, come on.
I bet you the point might do that. Maybe they might do Great Glass Elevator with that, maybe. Like, I mean, well, they can't get Gene Wilder back because obviously he's passed away now.
No, but maybe they can do a new series of Wonka films with Timothy Chalamet. It's like, okay, we saw him finally starting his chocolate factory. Now let's have a new adaptation of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And if that does really well, let's get Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator.
Yeah, maybe, like, well, maybe they might do that. Who knows? And so if it does happen, you know, like, I wouldn't be opposed to it.
I wouldn't be opposed to it either.
Yeah, so... So anyway, so that element of, like, you know, the fact that Willy Wonka nearly died is, you know, I didn't believe that, really. Mm. And, like, by the way, he was totally fine, you know, after he was, you know, he happily, like, turned a fountain of chocolate into, like, you know, his chocolate and then gave it to everybody, pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and so, you know, way to sell your
yeah, exactly,
your products.
Yeah, way to sell your products by using somebody else's products as your own.
To be fair, though, like, you know, I probably imagine that, you know, a lot of people, but the one of the reasons why, because... The people who own the factories, they wanted to make chocolate so expensive that, you know, not everybody would be able to, you know, have chocolate.
Right.
So, like, you know, I could probably imagine that, you know, a lot of people who were there who were probably sampling chocolate for the first time. In fact, I think they probably, one criticism I will have of this movie, they probably should have, you know, had it more where, like, you know, they showed that, you know, the rich and powerful, the only ones who basically can afford chocolate, and everybody else has to basically, like, have to, like, you know, suffer. You know, they could have, like, you know, made another reference there, you know, because, remember, it was, like, what was it? The Oompa Loompas had to go off mashed caterpillars or something like that, like, you know, to sustain themselves.
Well, I mean, that's the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory version. That's the 2005 film.
Oh no, well, I mean, that's in the book as well.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I
if you remember, yeah, exactly. So I mean, they could have put a reference to that in if they wanted to, like, you know, oh well, we can't afford chocolate, so we basically have to have this garbage.
Or maybe the cabbage soup.
Maybe the cabbage soup. Yeah, exactly. So like, you know, all the poor people are eating cabbage soup, and all the rich people are eating chocolate. You know, like, and then they could have had like a moment where Willy Wonka finally releases the chocolate, and then, you know, all the poor people now can have chocolate.
Yeah, I mean, it's also very similar to that scene in James and the Giant Peach, in which the peach finally lands in New York City, and then James allows everybody to eat through the peach. So again, it's another callback.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, there's some really good, you know, moments that they could have. By the way, you know, even if they didn't have that, like, you know, if they did put these things in there, like, you know, that would have, like, that wouldn't have, like, been, like, you know, a pass mark. That would have been a distinction mark, effectively. Like, you know, it would have been, you know, way to go above and beyond, effectively. But, you know, to be fair, with all the references they got in here right now, like, you know, they do go above and beyond. Like, you know, it's not just, you know, paying tribute to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It's not just paying tribute to, like, one of the best Roald Dahl characters, Willy Wonka. I feel like this is doing justice to, like, you know, the whole Roald Dahl world, effectively. Like, you know, I can point at this movie and say, yeah, this is what happens in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. This is what happens in a Roald Dahl, you know, universe, pretty much. I would accept that.
Yeah.
Whether Roald Dahl himself would have accepted that is another story.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, but yeah, I guess speaking of which, we forgot to mention that one of the Oompa Loompas does appear in this movie.
I played by Hugh Grant.
Yeah. Now, I know that there was a lot of controversy when this was first announced, saying, why couldn't you get a small person to play as an Oompa Loompa, just like in both Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
I can kind of see now why they didn't do it, because this particular Oompa Loompa apparently is not... Well, he says that, oh, I'm good for my size for an Oompa Loompa, but then he found out later on that actually, no, he's actually only a quarter of the size of a normal Oompa Loompa.
Right.
So basically, this is smaller than an Oompa Loompa. Yeah. So, I mean, I can understand why they decided to go with that. I mean, here's the thing, if they decided to go with, like, all the things that this, you know, Hugh Grant's Oompa Loompa needed to do, at the end of the day, like, you know, they couldn't do with a small person, or even a regular-sized Oompa Loompa in that. I think they needed to basically go CGI with this, in my opinion, because he would have to chat to him, like, in a small jar, and then there was those bits where, you know, he had, like, you know, the whole, like, you know, cocktail suitcase thing as well, and there was other bits and pieces that he would need to have done, which I don't think a regular-sized Oompa Loompa would have potentially have done,
right.
I think. So, I think it made sense now looking back at it. I mean, yeah, I would rather have had, like, a little person play an Oompa Loompa if they were going to, like, bring more of them in, but they only had Hugh Grant, and they only had a small Oompa Loompa to work with, so I sort of see, you know, from a technical perspective of why they went with that direction.
Yeah, and Hugh Grant does a really good job as
this Oompa Loompa. He does! Like, you know, I think that's something that shouldn't be left out. But Hugh Grant does a good job playing this Oompa Loompa.
I do agree. Yeah. And he even sings the Oompa Loompa song, which is a nice touch.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, to be fair, what else would you expect him to sing?
I mean, I guess that's true. You're right.
I mean, like, if he had his, like, you know, if they took the Oompa Loompa beat and decided to, like, have him do his own original song, I mean, I probably would have accepted that. But no, they decided to, like, you know, go with what the Oompa Loompa chant actually is, which I think, you know, is canon to what is going on. So,
sure. Yeah,
fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really great scenes that happen. I mean, of course, you have the scene in which when the giraffe enters into the church and chaos ensues.
Yeah, Rowan accidentally being chased around by a giraffe. You know, you wouldn't think you'd see that in, you know, in anything, but...
Yeah, I mean, we saw Rowan Atkinson being chased by a bee. We've seen Rowan Atkinson with a turkey in his head. But, yeah, this is taking it to a different level. I'll say that.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I guess I would say, you know, very good in that. I mean, also, this is something that... This is something crazy Roald Dahl would have come up with, in my opinion. You know, Rowan Atkinson in frock, you know, being chased around by a giraffe in the church. Pretty much, you know. And I love the bit where, like, you know, the Baroness is going to be coming and she hates people who, like, you know, are chocoholics, pretty much. So they have to basically not eat chocolate for that. But then, you know, Rowan Atkinson is so scared about what's happening. He thinks, like, you know, God's punishing him. So basically he bursts out the church with the Baroness and the funeral procession out in front and basically just asks him for saying how much of a chocoholic he is.
Yes.
And everybody is far from impressed.
So, nobody cares.
Funny enough, actually, they did all the plot for, like, you know, capturing the giraffe. pretty much, which is like, okay then, so like, you know, the funeral can continue. Like, it's so weird, like, you know, here you have, like, someone who's very sad, you know, like, you know, they're going to be burying their loved one, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, it's a round of applause, like getting rid of a giraffe out of a church that the funeral procession can be going on. I don't know, if I was in that, I'd be kind of like, you know, poor grandpa, you know, whatever his name is, you know, like, I'm trying to bury my loved one, and like, there's a giraffe running around this church.
Right.
I don't know if I want to live in the Roald Dahl world, to be quite honest with you.
It is pretty crazy, admittedly. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so there's an interesting plot twist involving with Noodle and Slugworth.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, by the way, spoilers, by the way, if you don't want to, you know, so we're going to go into spoiler territory, I think, at this point. So I think if you've not seen Wonka, go see it and then come back to us. And then, you know, we can agree, disagree in the comment section about what you think of the movie. So here we go.
Here we go.
All right, then. So it turns out that Slugworth is the brother of Noodle's dad. And so he passed away. And because his brother had no other living relatives, he basically inherited the fortune. And also the chocolate business as well. So, but apparently the mother turned up at Slugworth's house to say, you know, please can you take care of my child because I can't. And so he takes the child, basically just stuffs it down, you know, a laundry chute. So that bit was true, only to find out that Slugworth was the one who actually did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like, you know, scum.
Yeah, absolute scum. He tells the mother, I'm sorry, but your child died because it turns out that she was sick. And then he gives her money, tells her to go away. And then he just completely forgets about her until literally when he sees a ring around her neck with what he assumed was the letter N, which she called herself Noodle, but it turned out to be a letter Z for Zebedee, which was her father.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if Zebedee was like a reference to like the Magic Roundabouts at all, but
I have no idea.
I have no idea, but you know, regardless of that, so like, you know, there's that, you know, dark element that's basically thrown into it. I mean, by the way, also it's Roald Dahl, so of course we're gonna get dark elements in all of this. So, I mean, it's interesting now because now, you know, the businesses are now destroyed. So I'm guessing that, you know, even if Noodle was like, you know, a living relative and can now like, you know, inherit the, I mean, there's nothing to inherit pretty much. Like, you know, she's got, you know, the business is ruined. She's got nothing.
Well, I mean, if we were to see in the remaining story of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, they'll come back eventually because they end up stealing the formula for Roald Dahl's chocolate and candy. And that's why he shut the factory down. So, you know, they're going to come back eventually.
Yeah. I guess they will. And so, oh, that would be interesting. What if, you know, what if Noodle, like, you know, took over, like, you know, the Slugworth business and, like, you know, her and Wonka had, like, a massive falling out. And then, you know, Slugworth, you know, was going to basically be, you know, and she's the one who's running Slugworth, effectively. Like, you know, he's like, that'd be interesting storytelling.
That would be interesting.
If they do a Wonka 2, which I don't think they're going to do. Like, why? I mean, we're at the point now. I mean, it's interesting, though. Like, we leave the movie on the point where he takes an old castle and builds the chocolate factory out of the remnants of the old castle.
Yes.
And so, I mean, he's got that now, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's basically where he's starting off, pretty much, in regards to, like, you know, the chocolate factory and everything.
Right.
So we don't necessarily know how we got from that to, you know, him now finally wanting to find a successor. Like, you know, all, like, the problems that, like, happened, like, you know, closing the factory down, you know, sending all the workers away, stuff like that. Like, there is room, essentially, for a Wonka 2, if they wanted to do it, where, you know, he starts off the factory, he realizes that he can't trust his workers because secrets are falling out, so he has to, you know, get rid of them and bring the Oompa Loompas in order to basically make all the chocolate and everything. And so basically that creates the Roman mystery, and then that leads into Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, and if we were to believe in the book, then Willy Wonka is an old man where he has the whimsiness of a young person. So who knows? I mean, maybe they will again take creative liberties just like they did with Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, in which, you know, they played Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka and he was 30 years old at the making of that film. And so, okay, we're going to have maybe like several years into it. He has the factory, he's really, really successful, and then eventually he has to find a successor. So again, if this movie does really, really well, I wouldn't be surprised if they do another adaptation of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory with Timothy Chalamet as Willy Wonka.
Yeah, so basically how it wraps up is that, you know, the comedian finally gets his, you know, his comedy comeback, and everybody, you know, the telephone director goes back to her old job. You know, everybody seems to get their lives back on track.
Yeah, with the exception of, you know, of course, the, you know, Mrs.
Scrubbage and Bleacher, who, yeah, I think ended up going to jail.
End up going to jail, and they try to drink away the potion that Willy Wonka had, and then they turn into like these ugly creatures, which again, I think might be a reference to the quits.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So I, you know, unfortunately, everybody, like, you know, the minute the credits start rolling, I really needed the bathroom. So
I watched the credits and I saw what happened. So that's essentially what happened, where they turn into like these ugly yeti creatures. Then they have their one final kiss as they're being arrested, and then finally the credits roll.
Yeah. So, that's pretty much Wonka, and I gotta say to everybody, you know, it's a great, great, you know, Roald Dahl film. I mean, even though Roald Dahl never wrote it himself, and so, I mean, I guess here's the thing about this. I think they did their homework with this. They knew exactly what they were dealing with, and, you know, thankfully, they didn't go down, like, you know, the 1970s Disney thing. It was like, you know, what would Roald do? Instead of, you know, saying, what would Roald do? And they haven't done that in this sense.
No.
I think they've actually, you know, been very good with what they've got, and they're not just borrowed from Roald Dahl. I mean, dare I say, I mean, like, with our Noodle character, I was going to mention this. I mean, yeah, there's a little bit of Annie in there as well.
Little orphan Annie, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's not just Roald Dahl, I think, they're taking inspiration from. I think they're taking inspiration from quite a few things as well. Like, there's a bit where, like, you know, where Willy Wonka is, like, in his shop, and, you know, he's going what basically looks like, you know, where it looks like a candy road, but, you know, is that a reference to the Yellow Brick Road in The Wizard of Oz?
Maybe
I
mean, it is.
I think it is, yeah. I think they've taken the elements of, like, what makes, you know, these, some, you know, I'm pretty sure, like, also with, like, some of the flying things that are going on, it kind of reminds me of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang a little bit, really.
Which Roald Dahl was a screenwriter
exactly,
for.
Yeah, and so like that. I mean, good grief. I'm really glad we didn't get any references to, like, you know, 36 Hours Later or something like that. Like, you know,
Or maybe we didn't get a reference to, like, any of the James Bond films.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, can you really see, you know, Willy Wonka, like, you know, doing, like, James Bond kind of, like, things, really?
I don't even know. Maybe it'll be, like,
now you mentioned that, he kind of does. Like, you know, can you imagine Q? Like, I mean, okay, so if you sprinkle all this dust around, like, it turns the chocolate into, like, your chocolate. Pretty much, like, you know, it's fair. Like, you know, he has a lot of, like, gadgets and everything like that would kind of make him, like, somewhat on par with James Bond in a way.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. We're connecting him with everything.
You know what, like, you know, I just feel like we could just suggest a random movie and, like, you know, here it is, like, you know, like, Free Willy. Oh, yeah, like, you know, the giraffe being free from the zoo. It's like, you know, it's a Free Willy, there's a Free Willy reference in this.
There you go.
Well, yeah, I love this movie.
I did too.
I love it.
Like, now, there's one more thing I forgot to mention. What did you think of the music in this movie?
Well, I'm just looking at the soundtrack. No, I think, you know, Welcome to the Scrubbies, I think, is a scrub, I think, is a, you know, definitely a song that, you know, feels like, you know, oh, wow, he's, like, in this situation now. I think that's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Pure Imagination. I think they did a really good job of Pure Imagination.
I was
a bit worried because I thought, you know, they were going to do something with Pure Imagination, which, you know, was away from, like, the original one. But no, I think they did a really good job of, like, doing that reprise.
And so did the Oompa Loompa song, in which they kind of, like, twisted it up into new lyrics, but it actually fit within the context of both the story and the references to the original movie.
Yeah, but the one thing I would say that, I mean, we got to the Oompa Loompa song in this regard, like, you know, the Oompa Loompas don't really talk about their own incompetence, you know. This is kind of funny, like, you know, he has to basically do his own incompetence in regards to that. And, like, now, you know, he has to basically, you know, get back where he had plus 1,000 on top, 1,000-fold on top of that
because
as well. Yeah,
yeah,
I think Rupert Lumpers are pretty, you know, vicious in regards to, like, you know, I'll punishing say. Their own.
Yeah, pretty much.
They don't like incompetence whatsoever.
Nope, none whatsoever.
That's why Willy Wonka hired him.
That's right, because when Willy Wonka went over to Loompa Land, he stole 3 cocoa beans, and then you have the main Oompa Loompa, who is supposed to be the guard of preventing anybody from stealing it. Then when he wakes up and it's all gone, the other Oompa Loompas kicked him out and saying, you have to pay us back 1,000-fold. And so that's why he's been stealing Willy Wonka's chocolate for over 4 years.
Exactly. So, yeah, like, I tell you what, like, we should just see, like, who knows, maybe if Wonka becomes even more successful enough, maybe we might get a spin-off, like, TV series, like Oompa Loompas, like, you know, how their society works and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that'd be interesting to see.
That would be really interesting to see.
Give
absolutely.
Hugh Grant a bit more work as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, also, like, I love how, like, the monks just, like, sing everything effectively. Just like, you know, it's like
here comes giraffe,
you're welcome. Oh, amen. Oh, just this.
That's really funny.
That
yeah.
is funny as well. And, you know, but I think the songs are really good in this. The one thing I would say is that, I mean, dare I say, are they better than Matilda the Musical?
Oh, that's a really good question. I mean, we're talking about music based off of an actual Broadway musical versus original songs based off of a prequel to a well-established adaptation from Roald Dahl.
Yeah, because, I mean, dare I say, like, I love how, I mean, we'll watch Matilda the musical again, because, you know, I wonder if, you know, because I remember the Matilda songs being very impactful and, like, in some of the things that they do. I just feel like, though, there were some ones that were kind of like, they really need to be there.
I mean, we didn't really need the song with Miss Trunchbull doing Boot Camp with the Kids.
Oh, yeah, there was that. And, like, you know, it was like, good grief, what on earth were they doing there?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, but I would say the Boot Camp song, I don't think is as good as the Scrub Scrub song. I think the Scrub Scrub song makes a bit more sense.
Sure.
Yeah, like, but, you know, there's no, you know, pointless songs in this movie. Like, you know, there's no Marry the Mole kind of, like, you know, sounding like, you know,
no. I mean, every song is able to build up the characters, is able to continue the story forward, and it's able to continue to show us the motivation on why the character is acting the way they are.
I think the one thing I think everybody needs to do, when you put songs in movies, you have to kind of sit down and say, okay, well, what's this song trying to do? Is it trying to, you know, emote the, trying to put through the emotions of the character? Is it trying to forward a story along? Is it trying to, like, you know, introduce a plot? Like, you know, what's the purpose of this song? And that's what, even anyone who's doing songwriting for a movie needs to ask themselves that question before they even put pen to paper.
I do agree, because we've seen our really bad examples of people just putting in music because, oh, a certain studio is able to craft amazing music, and people just think, oh, if you put music in there, then obviously everybody's gonna love it.
Yeah, like, I think probably the worst, you know, music number, I think, from you know, for a song, and people might say this is very controversial. I still think it's, like, you know, the rap song out of The Little Mermaid, like, you know, with Scuttle, you know.
I'm sorry. I was not a huge fan of Scuttlebutt.
Exactly,
I did not like it. I know this was essentially, like, Lin-Manuel Miranda being Lin-Manuel Miranda, but still, that song was just, like, unnecessary.
It just reminded me, like, you know, all, like, you know, a cartoon character needs to rap in a 90s, you know, in 90s thing, because that's what's down with the kids.
Yeah,
you know, like, you know, that's what it came across to me as in that. And but thankfully in Wonka there's nothing like that in here.
No, every song that is featured in this movie actually makes a lot of sense in the
context
of the
story. I even like the villain song, like, you know, when they're trying to bribe the chief of police.
It actually builds up really, really nicely, where they're just talking about, like, you have this really nice sweet tooth. Here's this option of, you know, taking the opportunity to get rid of Wonka, and in exchange you have all this chocolate. The police officer says no. They bribe him even further. He says no. They bribe him even further. He says no. Then they make him an offer he can't refuse. The song ends with a handshake, and then it just stops.
There's your Godfather. The reference.
There you go.
Oh man, this movie's been so much fun to talk about.
Yeah, this was actually great. I was really skeptical about how this movie was gonna be.
I'm looking forward to seeing it again.
You know what, I would love to see it again too. That would be great.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, I guess everybody knows what we're gonna score this, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's I mean, here's the thing, though. I will be fair, and that is that, you know, this movie takes all the Roald Dahl elements, whether it's within Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, or whether it's, like, from his other roles and everything like that. I feel like, you know, they've really done their homework with this. I think the characters, I think all of this are great. I think the music in all of this, I think, are fantastic. There's no wasted song numbers in all of this. The way that they've put the elements all together in regards to the city, in regards to, you know, Wonka's character, the way that they all interact within this environment, everything like that. The build up to, I mean, here's the thing that I would say this about, you know, the build up towards the final act, I think I have some questions about.
Sure.
So, but here's the thing about this. I mean, as much as I love this movie, I will give it a fair score, but I think the fair score, I think you'll say, is justified. I will say 9.75 out of 10.
Okay, well, I was going to give it a 9 because, yeah, I would just say that maybe it's a little bit shaky towards, like, the ending when they tried to get rid of Willy Wonka, and maybe there are a handful of things that they could have tightened up, but for the most part, those are, like, nitpicks compared to everything else that they were able to do. Timothée Chalamet is an amazing Willy Wonka. All the new characters that are brought into this are really well done. The song numbers are great. The cinematography and the effects with the colorfulness of the chocolate and the world that Willy Wonka imagines in his mind is amazing. It is just right up there alongside with the other installments, in which they're able to give you a sense of wonder and whimsy and charm whenever that you see the imagination of Willy Wonka. It is amazing. amazing. And also the fact that we, you know, have three villains that are actually pretty awful and gives an interesting social commentary on corruption and greed. So again, this stuff is great. So yeah, other than just a few minor hiccups, this is right up there with the other Roald Dahl adaptations. I would say, oh man, like, how would I rate this in comparison to all the other adaptations of Roald Dahl that we've seen?
Well, let me say this. It's better than The Witches, don't you think?
Both of them? Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, we're creating out, like, you know, one of the most popular reviews right now is The Witches on the Roald Dahl retrospective.
It is,
and,
yes.
You know, for various reasons. But, I mean, everybody sort of agrees with us is that, you know, where the version that, you know, that they gave us, like, in the modern era, like, unfortunately, you know, pales in comparison to, you know, where what the book gives us. And, you know, but it kind of feels a bit sad, really, that, you know, here are some great, you know, books that Roald Dahl has done, and, you know, some of the movies that I've done. Unfortunately, the modern BFG, I still love the Cosgrove Hall version of, like, the one in the 1980s, and, you know, I don't really like, you know, I feel like I like the trailer for the BFG, what we got, you know, eventually just kind of felt a bit flat, really.
I do agree,
that.
Yeah.
You know, also, you know, the farting jokes also on that, you know, you think this was made by Nickelodeon Movies, not Disney.
Yeah.
And, so yeah, I'm really happy to see Wonka. It's just so sad that basically it's more a, you know, it's not from Roald Dahl himself. Unfortunately, it is basically, like, if anything, it's inspired by Roald Dahl's work rather than actually, you know, being coming from Roald Dahl himself. And it's just too bad that, you know, his current works don't get the same justice. Unless it's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which he hates.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we've talked about throughout this retrospective that, unless, of course, it's a really, really popular character based off of Roald Dahl, they don't really get a lot of appreciation or recognition from a lot of people. Unless, of course, if you're a diehard fan. A lot of his stuff, a lot of the adaptations underperform in the box office. And the only exception would be Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and again, a lot of people are mixed with it because they love Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I mean, both of his performance, I mean, obviously that is a factor, but at the same time, like, I mean, something could probably get not much, you know, recognition, but at the same time, it could still be a good movie.
Yeah, like Matilda, for example, like, that was a box office failure, and now it's just as beloved as Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Danny DeVito did a really great job with Matilda.
I do agree. And it's James and the Giant Peach, that was underperforming as well, and again, it's a massive cult classic for a lot of people who grew up with it. And Fantastic Mr. Fox underperformed really badly in the box office.
And that's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, mine too. So yeah, I guess I would say that even if a film underperforms, it would still be amazing. Now, going into the topic I was saying about, like, how would I rank this compared to all of the other adaptations I have seen, it's easily top 10. Now, whether it be top 5 is... that's a massive debate in itself.
Well, I mean, like, I'm pretty sure we'll find out soon enough, like, you know, how Wonka has performed. And, I mean, you and I, obviously, you know, we've pretty much rated this on 9 out of 10, pretty much, in regards to this. And so, I mean, as far as I go, you know, I think out of all the Roald Dahl films, that I think all the Roald Dahl materials that, like, you and I have been through, like, you know, out doing the Roald Dahl retrospective, I think this has to be the best.
It is definitely one of the best. Now, looking back on all three of the Willy Wonka films, and no, I'm not counting Tom and Jerry and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, that does not
exist. That was an experience, but
yeah.
Whether that's part of the Roald Dahl experience, I mean, it was fun to talk about, but I mean, obviously, we can't really include
We're not going to talk about it. So,
it's a Tom and Jerry cartoon.
Exactly, yeah. So looking at all three of those adaptations, about what each of them are able to deliver, like, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory delivers on a lot of things. Gene Wilder is Willy Wonka, the music and the whimsiness of it, but it does hold back on several things, such as some of the characters are not as fully developed as others, and the effects are pretty dated, and there are some pointless story beats that happen throughout the course of the film. That there's a reason why a lot of people remember the second half than the first half. And then there's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, a much more accurate adaptation of the book, much more closer to the source material in terms of its characters and its presentation. But at the same time, their Willy Wonka is not that great. It can sometimes go into a little bit more darker direction. And we were not keen.
He's not the only one with dogs raising. He was just a weirdo. Like, you know, like, I mean, like, there's a reason why we grew to love Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka, because we look at him and we could believe that I was this guy. And, you know, and also that, you know, he was very troubled at the same time. Whether it was, you know, where, you know, this Willy Wonka, you know, basically was scarred from childbirth, pretty much. And, like, you know, it's just, it's, you know, you can't really, like, you really hate being around him, if anything. Like, you know, he's just really unnerving and really, you know, kind of awful to kind of be around. Whether it's, like, you know, the Willy Wonkas that we've seen portrayed either, like, in, you know, like the Gene Wilder book, or even some of the audio dramas that they've done with Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, those exist out there. They always make him sound very charming, like, you know, like a very nice guy, if anything. Like, you know, maybe not all that reasonable, but you know why he's not reasonable. But, you know, they don't play him off as, like, you know, some kind of, like, you know, a guy who, like, has, you know, psychological issues, that, like they did with, you know, the Willy Wonka and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. You know, like, I think anybody who has, like, you know, the guy who played Dracula and Count Dooku is, like, as a dad, I think, you know, will always have some sort of problems.
Fair enough, and also the origin story of Willy Wonka wasn't that great, and the ending where we had to finish off with him reuniting with his dad, we just didn't care for it.
Not really. I mean, like, we kind of knew it was somewhat coming, but, you know, like it was, because originally, like, you know, Charlie doesn't, this is the thing that, you know, in the original Charlie Fashion, because I don't think he actually accepts the offer to begin with, and he actually goes back to his family.
Well, that did happen in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, yes, because he was told by Willy Wonka, once you come into the factory, you're never going to see your family again, and Charlie was like, absolutely not. I care more about my family than I care about the chocolate.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, like, in regards to, like, all the other things that we've seen in regards to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I mean, like, yeah, I think Wonka does definitely do justice.
Okay, yeah, now let's get into Wonka. Now, Timothée Chalamet, amazing Willy Wonka. The effects and presentation, top-notch. The music, I think that it's going to take a little while for people to remember the music just as much as this 1971 film. And I know that the 2005 film, a lot of people still don't remember it as fondly compared to the 1971 film, but it does have its fans. This one, on the other hand, where it's a full-blown musical, I think it needs a little bit of time for it to grow and integrated into our pop culture. Yeah.
As shallow as it sounds, like, unless, you know, Ariana Grande does, like, her own version of Pure Imagination, unfortunately, I think, you know, it will take a bit of time for everybody else to, like, you know, catch up with, you know, how amazing the soundtrack is for Wonka.
The new characters that were introduced to it, they all had a purpose, they were all memorable, and they each had their own story arc. And the villains are amazing because they are easily corruptible, they're greedy, and they wanted to stop at nothing so that they can be able to
One interesting thing I wanted to ask about, actually, about the villains is that, I mean, they had Slugworth. I mean, did they really need the other two? Really? Like, I get it. It was supposed to be like this whole cabal, like, yeah, you make it sound more like, you know, a conspiracy. I mean, you know, keep in mind, each of them, you know, had their own, you know, element within this. But I mean, like, why not just make them all like part of the Slugworth Chocolate Factory? Like, there's like commandeering, like, you know,
It is true that in the 1971 version, we actually did get a Slugworth. We did not get a Farble Grouper or a Prodnos. But again, that wasn't really Slugworth. That was just.
Is this like, you know, a caricature? Of, like, you know, the illusion of choice, like, you know, apparently there's because as we all know, there's like only like six, like, you know, corporations that make all our food, pretty much. Like, is it supposed to be like, you know, a reference to that?
Possibly, yes. Yes, and they just act similar because they want you to believe that it's all different, but at the same time, they all come from one source. So
exactly,
I wouldn't be surprised if that social commentary on that. But yeah,
some of that also the holding all the chocolate as well, like, you know, charging like, you know, obscene prices for it all as well.
Exactly.
And so, like, you know, the price gouging, pretty much, you know, and they're creating, you know, what basically is like, you know, a chocolate shortage in actual fact, like, you know, they're hiding it all under the church.
Thank you for bringing that up again, because that's another reference to Bogus Bunsen Bean, in which you have the scene in which Bogus Bunsen Bean are over by the tree where Mr. Fox and his family are, and Mr. Bean asks them, you know, how many men do you have in your group? 35. And Mr. Bunce, 36. Oh,
ooh,
I have 37.
I missed that, actually.
Yeah, and then he asked them, you know, Mr. Prodnos, how many gallons of chocolate do you have? I have 45,000. Mr. Farble Grouper, I have 55,000. Well, I have 100,000. I'm just going to pour all of it into Willy Wonka and Noodle and have them drown.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great reference. Thinking about that, though, like, imagine they did, like, they wanted to, like, you know, take care. One thing that would have been interesting is that, you know, they tried to bribe the chief of police, but he declines it. And so then they had that Like, well, how many men have you got working in your factory? How many men have you got working in your factory? Okay, well, we're going to send them all around the city, and we're going to have them find out where Wonka is.
Oh, that would have been a great reference.
That would have been better, wouldn't it?
I mean,
I guess we needed social commentary that the police are corrupt. So, like, I guess we needed that in there. But, yeah, that would have been a better way of doing it. Like, have informers all around the city, like, all the workers from the factory, like, trying to figure out where Wonka is.
That would be amazing to see. Yeah, I would have loved to have seen that reference. Yes.
Well,
anyway,
regardless of that, we got with this movie, I think was good.
Absolutely, so. Yes. So, yeah, I would say finally, in terms of how the story is portrayed, again, compared to Willy Wonka, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and then Wonka. So, again, I would say that the second half is definitely better than the first half, because you don't have all that pointless stuff of the entire world looking for the chocolate, the golden ticket. And then Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, again, I didn't really like the whole introduction of the backstory of Wonka with his dad. So I think this one is actually a little bit more tighter. So I would say that this movie is actually just as good as the two installments, maybe even a little bit better.
I mean, I would say right now, I mean, to be fair, we've only just come off watching this like only a couple of hours ago. So, I mean, like, is that clouding our judgment right now?
Okay, fair enough.
Well, would we think differently about it in a week's time? Like, I mean, to be fair, we're going to be keeping an eye on Wonka, because right now, like, the fact that we sat in a theater and the fact that they're like, this was our full on a work day, and now we've actually got, like, you know, we got sold out, going across theaters, you know, this evening. Now, this could just be a UK thing. It could just be the fact that, you know, we have, you Roald Dahl. UK is Roald Dahl territory, effectively.
Right.
You know, in regards to all this, it might just be a fact. It might just be the fact that, you know, the UK is getting it and everyone's being really, really excited about it, because everyone grew here in the UK pretty much grew up with Roald Dahl.
Yeah.
In regards to that, you know, you saw our video when we went to Great Mizzard and we took all the people there, and, like, you know, even there is like it's a pilgrimage for, like, you know, young people there. We saw a school that was going in there, like, you know, who all themselves were also, you know, inspired by Roald Dahl's teachings, you know, not teachings, but, you know, his books as well.
Yes.
And everything like that. So, like, I mean, it could just be that. That explains why, you know, theaters across the UK are currently full of people watching Wonka. Whether that's going to be reflected worldwide, you know, is yet to be seen.
Yeah, that's true. So I guess we'll have to wait a week's time for everybody else to get Wonka and see what their reaction's going to be.
Uh-huh.
All right, so that concludes our discussion of Wonka. So for the UK listeners, let us know in the comments below what you thought of this movie. Did you like it? Did you not like it? Were there some things that you liked compared to the other films? Or did you like it on its own merits? Let us know. And for anybody who's listening into our discussion from the US about a week after this is posted, again, let us know what you thought of it. So yeah, we're not going to come into the Roald Dahl retrospective for at least another 2 years, because the next adaptation is The Twits on Netflix. So until then, until there's like another announcement of another Roald Dahl adaptation that's going to be coming out. But yeah, until then, we will see you 2 years from now.
Okay. See you later, guys.
See everyone.